entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we're supposed to have with us on the show Stephen Schiffman, but I think we're running into some technical difficulties, so hopefully he'll be joining us here on the show in the very near future. But in the interim, I'd like to start by thanking our lovely sponsors, the people over at Markham Search. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States. They recognize the importance of working closely with the clients as well as the job seekers to make the perfect match. So please do keep Markham Search in mind for all of your potential hiring needs. Additionally, today, while we're waiting for Steve to join us on the show, I thought it might be a fun topic to talk about our perspective and how we can look at what we want our lives to look like. You know, one of the things that I've been doing a lot of talks on recently has been about empowerment. And it's so funny because even right now with Stephen not being on the show just yet, there are circumstances in life that can cause us to want to be reactive. Now, what do I mean about reactive? I know last week on the show, we were talking a little bit about emotional intelligence. And I believe when we were on the show, Sharon Schweitzer was mentioning the fact that it can take the brain up to 20 minutes to process something when they're going, when somebody is going through an emotion or an upset, that it can take 20 minutes to actually recover from that. So A, let me start by saying, sometimes when guests don't show up, you might catch me in the middle of my 20 minutes, which is just because we're human, because you have these things that happen. And we just get activated as human beings. But the secret is in life to not take anything personally, even if it seems like somebody is doing something that could be personal, whether it's your colleague, whether it's your boss. I had a similar situation happen to myself this morning on the way into the office. I had a rather chaotic morning and realized that I was missing one of our key conference calls that we do once a month. And for a moment there, I did have to actually pause because first, I had to ask myself, why am I getting upset? Why am I taking this personally? And what is my perspective on it? And sometimes it's just the mere act of whether you're late for a meeting or you're not included in a meeting, of looking at it and starting off by asking yourself, am I taking this personally? In fact, one of my very favorite books is from an author named Don Miguel Ruiz, the author of the book, The Four Agreements. And one of the four agreements, and whether this is a personal endeavor for you or a professional endeavor, I think the book can be applied in many different facets of life. But what I love that Don Miguel Ruiz talks about in the book is not to take anything personally. So what that means is if somebody says to me, let's say, Jennifer, you're the best recruiter or the best radio host I've ever heard, not to take that personally. Or if somebody comes barging into your office and starts ripping you a new one and saying, hey, Jennifer, you really screwed this up. I'm really angry with you. Not to take that personally. And what that is that's a whole new level of power. In fact, I'd like to share with you one of my favorite things that I like to open the talk that I do on empowerment around. It's a story that I recently heard about Martin Luther King Jr. that had me think differently about what empowerment really means. I'd like you to imagine right now that you are Martin Luther King Jr. or a world leader much like him. You are marching for a cause that you believe in, and the cameras are rolling, and everyone is looking at you like, what are you going to do? Your actions, what you say, is not only in that moment, but how people perceive you for days to come, months to come, or years to come. So I'd like you to imagine for a moment that the whole world is watching and that somebody walks over to you and spits on you. What would you do? Would you get angry? Would you yell? Would you scream? Would you Facebook about it? Would you retaliate and punch the person? What would you do? That's something that I'd love to explore and play around with you today while we're waiting for Steve to join us, is this concept of how do you be empowered in every situation? How do you not take something personally, even when it feels personal? even when somebody feels like they might be an adversary to you. How many of us out there have people who we think might not be wishing us the best? At some point or another, unfortunately, in many of our careers or in our personal lives, we might have come across somebody who, whether they physically spit on us or threatened our physical well-being, they might not have had the nicest things to say to us, whether they said those not nice things to our face, or perhaps they said those not nice things to us behind our back and gossiped, which is a whole other conversation in and of itself. So how can we begin to choose to respond rather than react? Well, let's start by looking at what responding is versus reacting. Reacting is an instinctual act designed to counterbalance something else, which is by its very nature a weak stance. When we respond, it's a choice to act. It is powerful. The moment that we notice that we're coming from a fight or flight mentality, in that moment, we actually have access to choose something different. This ties in exactly to what Sharon Schweitzer and I were speaking about last week about emotional intelligence. So I'll give you an analogy. Imagine that you are riding one of those carriages. We've all seen it, the Budweiser carriages with those beautiful Clydesdale horses. And you have this carriage behind these Clydesdale horses. Well, imagine, what if there was no driver in that driver's seat to guide the horses? What you have is a literal amount of horsepower that could very well drive you right off of a cliff, because you're dealing with animalistic instincts. If something comes and spooks the horses, what are they going to do? They might rear up, they might run to the right, run to the left, but you have no control over it. So the question is, if we're like those horses with the carriage, but we're without the driver, how do we actually begin to guide our animalistic instincts in those moments when something doesn't go our way? How do we go from reacting and being like the horses to responding and choosing and directing the carriage? Well, for those of you who are already thinking about this, you've probably figured it out. You take the reins. The moment you take the reins, you can then guide the horses the direction you want to go. You can guide the carriage you want to go. And I use this analogy not only for horses, but for your life. If you look at your life through the lens of these horses and this carriage and realizing how many times in your day you let go of the reins and just let the horses run wild, versus how many times, even in those moments when you feel like the horses are getting ready to rear up, that you actually take the reins and guide the horses. So how do you do that? When you're in the midst of an upset, we're going to build upon what we talked about last week with Sharon Schweitzer. There are 5 steps in order to create an empowered perception and to regain control of the reins. Number one is to pause. When we pause in that moment, as I just mentioned, you've already done half the battle. When we pause, all of a sudden, we have that opportunity to choose to take the reins, and more importantly, to even realize that the reins exist. So let's give a real life example. Let's imagine your boss comes into your office right now, and she starts screaming at you about a deadline that you've missed and how you're worthless and you don't get anything done right. In that moment, your horses are going wild, understandably so. So just imagine, if before you do or say anything to your boss who's screaming at you, you pause. Then number two, what if you allow a breath? Now, why do I use the term allow a breath? One of my greatest teachers, Arthur Joseph, I cannot recommend his book enough. He was actually a guest on the show. I believe it was September of 2017, if you want to go back and find that episode. But he wrote a great book called Vocal Awareness, and it's all about how we can use our voice as an instrument. Well, one of the ways in order to use our voice as an instrument, personally or professionally, is to allow a breath. Arthur Joseph gives a great example is when we say, take a breath, I bet many of you out there tuning in and listening right now just gasp for air. And that's, again, an animalistic thing. When we allow a breath, it allows you to be grounded and centered and mindful. So just imagine your horses are going wild, your boss has just come in and started screaming at you, and number one, you've paused. Number two, you've allowed a breath. Number three, you've asked yourself, this is number three, am I taking this personally? Going back to Don Miguel Ruiz in the book, The Four Agreements. Number four, ask yourself if what you're about to say is the truth and if what you're about to say needs to be said. Now, the funny thing about these five steps that we're going through is I like to joke with people that it's kind of like shooing. Sometimes you have to go back to step one, and you might need to pause again, and you might need to allow another breath, and you might actually have to ask yourself again, am I taking this personally? But as you move through each of these steps and you ask yourself if what you're about to say is the truth and if it needs to be said, then you can get to the final stage and ask yourself if what you're about to say can be said from a non-emotional place. Now, I guarantee you, in going through each one of these steps, you are taking control of the reins of those wild horses that are steering your cart off of the trajectory that you intended to go on, and you are regaining control of this. Now, I'd love to share with you a little story, actually, and I have not forgotten about Martin Luther King Jr., so you have to stay tuned till the end of the show in order to find out how that all turns out. But I'd like to share with you a story with a job seeker who actually called in, and one day I was preparing her for an interview. And one of the things I do when I prepare a job seeker for an interview is we go through a variety of different traditional interview questions, ranging from what is your weakness, tell me about yourself, why should we hire you? And then one of the questions that can really trip people up is, tell me about a challenging time or person or situation that you recently dealt with. And so what I loved about this, and I will never forget this until the day I retire, is this particular job seeker had one of the better stories I had ever heard about a challenging situation, which is exactly what we're talking about, those times where you can easily become reactive. She said, well, Jennifer, there was once a position that I was interviewing for, and it was a couple years ago, and it was a position supporting the CEO of an organization. Well, I sat down to interview with him, and within the first 2 minutes of the interview, he jumped down my throat and said, well, I'm a yeller, so how are you going to handle it when I yell at you? And she kind of gave a little laugh. And now for many of us, we might just kind of freeze up or wind up being a deer in the headlights or run out of the office crying. I know I've been in those situations in the past when I was, you know, first starting my career. But what I really admired is how this woman responded. She said, well, sir, here's what I'm going to do. The first time that you yell at me, I am going to stand up from your desk. I'm going to walk down the hallway. And then I'm going to turn around and come back and sit down at your desk and then allow you to finish yelling at me. Well, you can imagine this man was pretty caught off guard by this because this was not a typical sort of response that he would have seen in an interview. So what happened was he actually said, well, you know, fine, you're hired. So she took the job. And about 2 weeks into the position, we can all guess what happened. She starts the job and he calls her into his office and he starts yelling at her and demeaning her and being degraded. And in that moment, she did exactly what she said she would do. Instead of reacting to it, she paused. She was able to step up, not take it personally, walk down the hallway, return to his office. And in her case, there was nothing that even needed to be said because by the time that she sat down across from this man, he was laughing. He had never in his life actually encountered somebody who hadn't just cowered before him when he had been yelling. So why do I tell you this story? Twofold. Step one is because of the fact that I want to reinforce this idea of pausing and allowing a breath and not taking things personally. Now, did this particular person have these tools? No, she had her own variation of tools. But what you can see from this situation is that she had the opportunity to interact differently with this gentleman than she had ever interacted or than anybody else had ever interacted with him. Number two, the other thing I would love to share with you that's another way to have non-reactive relationships personally and professionally is to notice your stance. This is something I'd learned years ago, and again, I love this program. It's called Landmark Education, and I was in one of their senior leadership programs, and I remember they started talking to us about stances, and you can also Google it. There are many different programs that teach about this. So in this particular situation, what a lot of us do is there's what's called mother-child, father-child, playmate-sibling, admirer-admirer, or professor-student. And there are other stances that you could possibly come from. But one thing that you could see, and maybe I invite you to look in your life and to notice a time where you recently were activated or triggered or got upset or reactive with somebody, I would be willing to bet money on the fact that there was a similar pattern or a situation that was not just a one-off. For me personally, I've noticed that the times where I get most reactive is in father-child. So if I'm in a relationship with somebody personally or professionally, and the person begins to have that kind of father authoritative figure, and I'm coming from the child stance, I tend to shut down because of fear of disappointment, and then that can cause me to be reactive. Well, what I love that this job seeker did is that in lieu of being upset and going into perhaps father-child or mother-child, and this might not be true for everybody, but it's just something fun to play around with and to see different ways that you could choose to respond rather than react, she played around with a stance of playmate sibling. So rather than if he's in the father mode and she's in the child mode, what she was able to do is be playful around it. So sometimes when we're in the middle of a reactive upset on our end or somebody else's end, if we can pause and bring awareness to what stance we're coming from. Now, this takes a lot of years in development, and eventually it'll become just like breathing because it'll become second nature to you. But it does take a little bit of time and energy to be able to figure out, oh, okay, what is it that I need in this moment? How could I shift and choose a different stance? If you know, and I invite you to look at this week and try to figure out what stance you get most triggered by, and then notice it the next time it comes up, and then ask yourself, admirer could be one of like, hey, I really like that you do this, or, you know, maybe you could pay somebody a compliment in lieu of responding from a reactionary, or sorry, reacting to however they're antagonizing you. So these are just a couple of things that you can do when you're dealing with reacting versus responding. Another fun idea to play around with, and I think I've touched on this on a couple of shows, is perception. One thing that we all have is our perception. Now, if we were all sitting in a classroom or in a, you know, a speaking sort of style right now, I would actually have you raise your hands and ask you how many of you think that your perception is reality. Now, for the numerous times that I've delivered this talk around the country, one of the things that I've noticed is nobody's hand goes up. When I ask them, is this reality? People will say, well, no, it's not reality. So then how do we get into what is reality and is our perception the truth? One of my friends and teachers taught me something from neuro-linguistic programming. For those of you who aren't familiar, it's called NLP. And one of the concepts around NLP that applies to all of us as human beings is this idea that we all have, and this is scientifically validated as well, billions with a B as in boy, bits of information bombarding us, sights, smells, touch, sounds, etc. So we have these billions of bits of information that are bombarding us at any given moment or time. However, we only pay attention to a couple thousand of those billions of bits of information. So we're really only paying attention to 0.000, however many 0.1% of what's going on around us. So what actually has us choose what we're perceiving? Well, what has us choose what we're perceiving is what we're choosing to focus on. For those of you who may have tuned in a week or two ago, I think I'd given the analogy of walking around in this huge dark warehouse and it's pitch black and you can't see even the hand in front of your face. But the only thing you can see is this headlamp. And this headlamp is our perception. And so if you can imagine that you're surrounded by darkness and you have this one little headlamp to kind of guide your way, the only thing that we're going to see is the direction that we point the headlamp, which is our perspective. So one of the things that I was taught many years ago is that if you see a thing as good, it becomes good. If you see a thing as bad, it becomes bad. So what's the harm in choosing a good perception? In fact, I remember many years ago, where somebody worked with, and unfortunately, I'm sure we've all had this happen at one point or another, personally or professionally, where somebody disappoints us. I mean, let's be honest, we are all human beings at the end of the day, and we have probably disappointed people, whether we realized it or not, and other people have disappointed us. Well, unfortunately for me in that situation, when I had this particular individual disappoint me the first time, I began to make a case for why this person was a disappointment. So for those of you out there who are scratching your heads and saying, what does Jennifer mean about that? What I mean is I began to look for evidence of all the ways that she was a disappointment. And so every time that she would do something, I would actually look for, oh, what was disappointing about what she just did or how she just did that? Well, you can imagine that would be a pretty crappy situation to work with someone in, and it creates for an adversarial or antagonistic relationship, advertently or inadvertently. So in this particular situation, I was at my wit's end, frustrated working with this particular person, and we've all had it with colleagues, with peers, with friends, those people who are just like nails on a chalkboard who just drive you crazy. Well, then one day I got a mentor who came along and who said, Jen, I'm going to share with you something you might not like. And I said, oh, okay. You know, we all get very excited when somebody's about to tell us something that we won't like. So he said, I'm going to throw something out there and just try it on. Not that it is the truth. Just see if there is any truth in it. He said, what if you are creating this person to be a disappointment through your perception of her? Oh, I was so mad. How dare you? The nerve. I have all the evidence. I've been making a case for all the ways this person is a disappointment. Well, you can imagine, I was pretty frustrated and I was, perhaps stubborn and adamant that it wasn't my fault, that it was this other person's fault. And so finally, the person said, hey, Jen, I'm not saying that you have to take this on like it's the right thing or the truth, but just try it on for a week and just look at your perception and see if you can find one good thing about this person every single day for a week. And the strangest thing started to happen. At the end of the first day, I was actually able to find one or two things that I liked about the person instead of the nitpicking I was doing about all the ways this person was a disappointment. The second thing was that by the end of that week, that person wound up actually being one of my greatest allies. And over time, that person wound up being somebody who I really thoroughly enjoyed working with. Now, the interesting thing is nobody else is ever going to force somebody else to go out and listen to this podcast or find a mentor or teach them this. But because you are listening to this, you now have access to seeing your perspective and seeing the filter through which you see people. So the next time that you're encountering a difficult challenge or a person or a situation, or am I looking for the bad, or even take it a step further and look at the filter in the same way that we all have heard of this concept of rose-colored glasses, we can also put on anger-colored glasses or disappointment-colored glasses. And the moment that you start to see the filter that you're seeing the world or that person through, it could be your worldview or it could be specific to an individual. The moment you do this, now you have an opportunity to choose. And that's where your power comes in. As we started off earlier today saying, when we have the power to choose, that's when we get to respond rather than react. And one of the last things that I'll leave you with that ties into this particular concept is this idea of the drama triangle. So for any of you out there who might be outside of the United States, you can Google it and find out about it. It's called a cartoon called Rocky and Bullwinkle that perfectly illustrates this concept of the drama triangle. And for those of you not familiar with it, I'll give you a quick synopsis. You basically have Dudley Do-Right, this Canadian mountaineer who is the hero, who is always coming in to save the day. Then you have Snidely Whiplash, the evil villain, who is always coming in and thwarting and trying to tie the victim, Nell Fenwick, I think is her name, to the train tracks. So you can see this drama triangle between the hero, the victim, and the perpetrator. You have the person who's always causing harm by tying people up to the train tracks. You have the hero who's always coming in to save the day. And then you have the victim who always needs to be saved. So how does this relate to what we're talking about when it comes to reacting versus responding? Well, remember the example I just gave of the person who I said was very frustrating to me, and I just had this experience of this person being a disappointment. The only way to exit the drama triangle and to remove the shame, the guilt, the anger, the frustration, and the blame, all those emotions that I was just sharing with you that I personally firsthand experienced in that scenario when I was enmeshed in the drama triangle, is the thing that my mentor taught me. Accountability. The moment we begin to see where we might be contributing to any aspect of the drama triangle. In my case, I was able to see how my perspective was putting me in a situation of victim and the other person in a situation of perpetrator. And the moment that I was able to remove that invisible barrier and that perspective and that filter that I was seeing that person through and take accountability, all of a sudden, all of that shame and blame and guilt, all of it went away. So it's funny because bullying, you know, sometimes when you face a bully, you can face a bully head on. But, you know, when you assign somebody the aspect of perpetrator, you could actually be the victim and the hero at the same time. I'll give you an example that a gentleman shared with me at a conference I was speaking at in DC. So we started speaking about this example of the drama triangle and what it looked like. And I asked if anybody in the audience had an example of where they could see that they were the hero, the victim, or the perpetrator in their own lives. And this particular gentleman was very courageous. He raised his hand and he said, "Jen, I have to be honest. I actually can see a recent scenario where I was all three, the hero, the victim, and the perpetrator." And so we were all obviously very curious about his example. And so he shared with us, there was a recent Friday night where he was supposed to go home and he had family to see and things to do. And his firm, the company that he worked with, was about to roll out a new software program. Well, at the 11th hour, he realized he could save the company $700. So he went to the management team on a Friday late afternoon, early evening, and said, "Hey, I just found out we can save $700 by using this new program instead. What are your thoughts?" So in that sense, he was being the hero. Then what happened was he wound up being a victim of his own circumstances because he had to stay there until that night at midnight to get this new program installed instead of the one that the company had already planned on. And in that situation, he could also see that he was the perpetrator because he put himself in that situation. And the moment he was able to see that, he got his freedom and power back. So with that, I'd like to take you back to that story. That story about Martin Luther King Jr. Imagine Martin Luther King Jr. is marching for a cause that he believes in. A man walks up to him and spits on him. Would you like to know what Martin Luther King Jr. did? He looked at the man who spit upon him. He looked down at his handkerchief in his pocket. Martin Luther King calmly pulled the handkerchief out of his pocket while looking the man dead in the eye who had just spit on him. Martin Luther King Jr. calmly wiped the spit from his lapel with his own handkerchief. Then he carefully folded that handkerchief back up and he handed it to the man who spit on him and said, "I think that this belongs to you." Now, why do I leave you with that story? Because that is something that we could all strive for. What would it take for every one of us in our lives to be like Martin Luther King Jr. in that moment, to not take anything personally, and to realize that whatever somebody is saying or doing, that belongs to them. It doesn't belong to us. It's just a reflection of that person's own internal stuff that they have going on. Maybe they had a tough day. Maybe they were frustrated. And it's not to give them a free pass. It's just to realize that we have an opportunity as human beings to never take anything personally and to maintain our power. So though I'm very sorry that Steve Schiffman was not able to join us today, I hope that you've enjoyed my little dialogue or monologue rather on how we can all choose to respond rather than react with any circumstances that you might come or find yourself upon this holiday season. And next week, we're actually going to be talking to Brooke, and Brooke is a career coach, and we're going to be talking about mastering the mindset for a successful career transition. So I do invite you to join us next Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time as I speak with Brooke. And we talk about mastering this mindset and how to make career transitions. And if you missed any portion of today's show, as always, I invite you to go to LA Talk Radio's website and to click on the Get Yourself the Job page, and you can find an archive for this show and any prior shows that we've done as well, and listen to them at your leisure. Or if you prefer, later in the week, following every show, you will find the episode from that week available on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And we do invite you to leave us any comments, to rate us. You can also interact with us on the Get Yourself the Job Facebook page as well. And again, this show would not be possible without you and your listenership. And I'm intending that each and every one of you hopefully got one thing of value that maybe you hadn't thought of before, or one new thing just to consider as far as your own perspective is concerned. Thank you for tuning in today and wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.